they're like, oh, so how long do you think it's gonna take before you finish? Because they know what I'm doing. Yeah.
Yeah. Do they know who you are at this point, or do they think
they think I'm a random decorator.
Anyways,
they're thinking
they took the card, but it's like, you know, the respect ain't there. Like, are you sure? Yeah, like, you're this guy.
Yes, people, welcome back to the Property Strategist Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the building.
Yes, sir.
How's everyone doing?
I'm lovely. You can't complain. You know,
you're very laid back today.
I am.
It's been a long week.
It's been a long week. Yeah.
Should we download later?
Yeah, download later.
Okay.
Definitely download mine later as well.
Right.
Everyone's going through it, man. We had a special guest that's flown in.
Yes, sir. Yes.
Flown in.
Kind of. Not really.
Let me have it.
Yeah, I have it.
Flown in from Dubai. Especially from Dubai for this podcast.
San Fran before that.
Yeah, it was San Francisco. Then we called him and he said he had to come to London. He said, okay, cool, I'll get a sex plane.
Embellishment of the story. It's all good.
Good timing. We're here now. So that's like. But bro, introduce yourself. What's your name?
Just to give us a small snippet.
Yes. Okay, wow. So my name is David Ajay. I'm a chartered architect and the CEO and founder of the Condition Architecture Group, which is a multi-headed company consisting of architectural and property development. Mm. And we do lots of other stuff for various different types of clients, commercial, residential, retail as well. And yeah, that's what we do, all things property really.
Amazing.
For now. Amazing.
for now.
Chartered architect. Chartered
architect. Oh, come on now. I've got 3 degrees. I have to tell you. I paid. Plus with 10 tiers.
Love it.
But today, man, we want to dive deep into your story. Mm. We definitely want to hear some story about some of your projects. Mm. and some of the stuff you're doing, because I think it's quite unique. But yeah, maybe let us know a little bit about your background and how you started Condition. You know, what is the business and how did you get started with it?
So essentially, I come from a background of, you know, sort of similar to many people that we all know, sort of in the ends, London, growing up. And what happened was I wanted to be a graphic designer because I love graphic design in secondary school, which I went to St. Bond's. And essentially what happened was a government organization called Capital Experience came along and offered 4 weeks paid internships for young people to basically learn about the construction industry.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't care about the construction industry. I just cared about the 4 week paid internship. Because back then I was like, well, I was 15 or 16 and it was £6 an hour. I was like, what? That's crazy. I'm a millionaire. Mm. And so then literally applied and by the grace of God, got one of the internships with a joint venture between Musho Apartment and Balfour Beatty back then.
Oh.
And what happened was I went through that process, learning all about all the different roles. And when I saw what the architects were doing, I was like, nah, this is what I want to do. Like, you're telling me what I draw here today, we're going to make on site in a few weeks. I was like, nah, that's crazy. Mm-hmm. So that was it. And since then I went on through my education, university degrees, and went into industry, struggled to find a job after my first degree, and went to work in banking for quite a while just because I needed a job. Mm-hmm. And I had a family relative die and I was like, no, life is too short. Let me just go through this again. Went for my master's at University of East London. And while I was there, I looked at the salary expectations for an architect when I finished. Because I'm thinking, okay, so what am I going to be on when I finish? Because I hadn't really done that because I kind of was just doing things
just as and when.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And basically I looked at it and they said, when I finish, I should get 38K. I'm like, I'm about to invest north of 6 figures in this education process, 30K isn't really going to cut it.
Mm.
So then literally I just said, okay, cool. The only other way is just to start up a company. Mm. So while I was studying my master's, I just started a company. I was 26 at the time. And I used a number of the connections that I'd made in the banking industry to sort of form my first clients, very small jobs, you know, interior refurbs, little things, knocking out walls, small extensions, little things like that. And really and truly, that is really the truth of the way in which the company was built initially. Some people can say, you know, I had wanted to investigate things beyond my boundaries, and I can give you the whole PR spiel. But that's not the real. I want to tell the truth, and the truth of the matter is, it was money at the end of the day, because I saw that it was an industry in which it didn't pay very well, even though everyone thinks it pays very well, it doesn't. And it still doesn't.
I really did think
No. Trust me, it's very poorly paid.
Because I know uni, it's like 6 years, right? Or something like that.
Well, four. It takes 7 years. Six to seven years is probably the fastest you can do it. But in that process, it's only if someone's completely bankrolling you because it's very expensive to do. Because obviously you've got model making materials. You're not just, you know, printing out an essay and submitting that in a year, which is 2p a page. No. You're talking, you're printing out big boards, you're spending hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pounds to produce models, produce art boards to then present your work.
Yeah.
Obviously, that isn't paid for.
How do people finance that though? Like normally, like is it loan?
So typically, most people obviously get student loans and stuff like that. Cool. But it is traditionally a rich kid's field. So traditionally, it is a venture that if only the wealthy went into.
Yeah.
You know, so banker mum and dad will finance everything. Even when you go into practice, you know, it's not really about the money. It's more about the art. It's about the passion, all this type of stuff, which is fine if you have bank and mum and dad.
Yeah.
But if you're trying to build, if you're trying to like make something happen.
Did that put you off in the beginning? Or was it something that motivated you more? Like, I want to be, you know, be that person that looks different in the industry in a sense.
So I'm a kind of person, I just see things as hurdles. So it wasn't something that motivated me or didn't motivate me. It was something that I said, okay, cool. I've got to find a way around this, you know? So I just saw it as, okay, the industry doesn't make money. How do I make money in industry? And one of the ways to do that was to create my own firm and to go at it that way. Obviously, that comes with obviously negatives as well as positives, which obviously the uplift being more money, but obviously you have more responsibility, risk, the likelihood of being sued for something. If you make a mistake, it's all on you. You don't have, you know, the big brother to sort of ask the question to, which you would have in a traditional sort of employed role. And yeah, I mean, it's that sort of, and then naturally, as I progressed into architecture, I started delivering projects for developers. And then I started saying, hold on. So I'm doing all the drawing, I'm doing all the work. What does the developer do?
Yeah.
All he has is the money
and
the time to go and find the site.
Mm.
So I said, okay, so why can't I do that
as well
as an architect? Then I can do that, and then I can have, rather than having the small size of project, I can have the whole project. You know, so then that sort of developed into Condition Estates, and sort of looking at more developments ourselves in-house, small scale stuff, and sort of operate more sort of similar things to some of the stuff that you guys do in terms of working as a property entrepreneur. But I just saw it as, it just is natural progression. I don't know why more architects, more designers don't go that route, you know? But again, I see it as is the complacency from the rich kid's passion, you know?
I think because I want to definitely get into the the architecture side more before we get into the property development side.
So good.
But from what I've heard, a lot of architects, and you tell us that it's a rich kid sort of subject and stuff like that. A lot of them learn how to, they kind of see it as more artistic as opposed to practical. Was that the same thing for you, or was it more like, and did you notice that? Did you see that most people that studied it, they took it more of it was like a passion project. It was more like they're being artistic. But then for you, you kind of knew how to connect the dots between it being artistic, but actually practical in terms of carrying out developments, et cetera. And stuff
exactly.
Like.
So for me personally, in my business, the way that we work, we focus on value. So we understand that good design is important and good design has its place, but it cannot be the overarching thing that drives a project, because I can design you the perfect house, but if you can't afford to build it, what's it worth? Do you know what I mean? So for us, it's more about value. It's what's the value of the project? What's the value to my client? What's the value to the site that I'm bringing? And if it means that I have to deliver something that maybe isn't the portfolio showpiece, but it works, and it works for our investor, it works for our client, and they can go on and repeat and have that success, then that's fine. We'll do that. You know, so that's why a lot of the work that we do, like we do quite a lot of refurbishment work. We do works with fire safety and lots of other stuff that isn't, you know, glitz and glamour of architecture, but it's needed and it's what our clients need from us at that moment in time. And I think because I have that focus on value, which is why I've been open to those types of things. And that's sometimes those things have produced more revenue for us than, you know, the fancy design projects. So you know, you could speak to many people and you will know that in other parts of the industry, people like Corning surveyors and building surveyors typically make a lot more money than architects.
Yep.
a lot more money. It's a lot more money. Like,
you just send them pictures as well, and then get paid £750 just like that. Boy, just for pictures.
Half an hour's work.
You didn't even come out.
They're doing this,
but yeah. But like, again, it's value. It's value. It's because what they're doing is needed. It's needed. Like, and if it depends on what your KPIs are for a project. So any client that comes to me, I always ask the question, what's the most important for you? For some people, they want to design the best house on the street. They want to design the best house in the area. They want to win awards and all that type of stuff.
Okay.
That's fine. We'll go that way. But for other people, is I just want to make a return,
yes,
sell it and go on. Yeah. So that means everything becomes standardized. Sounds everything
like,
becomes normal.
Like, okay.
So just like touching on that. So let's say your clients come to you like, would they go to client like to you as an individual and have to see your work beforehand and say, "Ah, listen, I'm trying to go for the awards. I like his work. I'm going for him." Or is it they just find it? Like, how do they choose who they want as well?
A lot of it is word of mouth and referrals. So some of our, especially when it comes to high-end design projects, it's a lot of referrals. There's a lot of people building up trust and people, oh, I need an architect to do this really nice house. Oh, have you used this guy? Use this guy before, and a friend of a friend and that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. So a lot of it is referrals. There is obviously always room for like online presence and stuff like that, because there's things like Find an Architect, which is a link within the RIBA portal, where you can search for chartered architects and we will be there. So some of, I think to date, probably two or three of our clients have come via that Find an Architect portal, where they search for an architect near to their home and that type of thing. And that's sort of how we got that particular bit of work. Mm. But a lot of it is referrals, word of mouth. Mm. And I think it's probably the same for a lot of property. It's about being connected with the right people that know your skill set at the moment in time when an opportunity arises. Mm. Because usually if there's something going to happen in property, when the deal was a goer, then everything needs to move quite quickly. Mm-hmm. So when a developer or an investor is sitting there, they have this deal, you know, they've got to go ahead from their financiers or whatever, they secure the asset, then it's, okay, I need an architect. And whoever comes to mind is usually going to get that phone call. Whether it's one person or three people or five people, as long as you're connected with that person, then hopefully you get that phone call and then you can bid for the work and do it that way. There's also public procurement frameworks and public tenders as well. We have found them to be slightly inefficient in terms of the amount of time you need to invest and the amount of competition, because obviously you have no guarantee as to what pool size they're working with. There could be 1,000 architects, so sometimes that isn't sort of the best return of investment that we find. And referrals have been and direct to customer stuff has been working best for us.
What kind of budgets do your clients have, like some of the higher end clients? Like, what kind of budgets do you work with, and can that be
just think, then what should I tell this
people? But you know what it is? With us, I like to say that we work on anything, because the way in which we work, so we have a very tech-based approach, which saves a lot of time, which enables us to pass on those cost savings to our clients. Mm. So I would like to say we can work on any sort of budget, but that's not not realistic.
Big boys now.
I would say, really and truly, if it's below sort of like 50 grand, then it's probably something that's probably a bit too small for us to give you the value that we can give you within that project and still have enough funds to be able to execute the project. Mm-hmm. If someone was coming to us to say, oh, we want to put some paint up on the walls and knock down the wall, maybe I'll do it. If I know you or you come via someone that I knew, then maybe we'll do it. Mm-hmm. But if it's just like a random person online, I probably won't do it, because it's going to take up too much time, and it's going to take a time away from the other projects that we can do. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So, but in terms of range, I mean, just to give an example, one site that we just worked on fairly recently was acquired for just shy of £50 million. But then we've also worked on other things that have much bigger projects in collaboration with other architects as well. So we worked on Tottenham Football Stadium. Oh. We've worked on Greenwich Peninsula, which is sort of four towers next to the O2. And lots of other bits and pieces where we've collaborated with other architects on, and those range all the way up to about £1 billion in value.
Got you. Wow. So just to confirm, you don't do like smaller refurb projects. So for example, I want to turn this into a 6-bed HMO. Do the drawings for me and stuff like that. Do you guys bother doing that?
It depends. it depends where it is. Depends on how complicated it is. If it's like you guys or people that we're already connected with, then we would always look to deliver and add value. Okay. But it isn't something that I would say we're going out marketing for. Yeah. I wouldn't say we're going out marketing to be HMO, because I think that there's like almost like a taboo portion of our sector, which is not registered architects, which are just, you know, CAD technicians, people that could do drawings. And what we find is that at the low end of the scale, there's a lot of people that are working in that space that aren't necessarily chartered architects.
They're charging cheap.
And they charge, you know, for comparison, I mean, I've had people that compared our quote with, that have said, you know, we found someone to do it for £200. You know, £200, stuff like that. But it's like, again, if that person can deliver the value, the same value that I can give you, then by all means, take the £200 and do your thing. Because me, I'm not egotistical. Yeah. You know, I don't really, not that I don't care, but it is what it is. Do you know what I mean? So so it's about value at the end of the day. And if that person that can charge £200 can give you that value that you need and give you the win that you need at the end of it, then do your thing.
I was going to say as well, because I know technology plays a big role in cognition and the way you operate your business. From when you started the business till now, what's the shift in like technology played in that industry and how it impacted and how you're using it in cognition?
Okay, so I'll give you a good example. So this is something that's gonna be inside that I'm gonna release fairly soon. But I'll give it an exclusive gem. It's not really a gem, but it's a bit of a gem. Anyway, but no, it's more sort of like that's already happened. Well, yeah, so but anyway, but so essentially, so we are experts in something called BIM, which is building information modeling, which essentially, how do I describe BIM? Simplest way to put it is that if you were to design a project, rather than doing 2D plans and sections and elevations as normal architects will do, I say normal, but traditional architects should do, should I say, we're not normal. But anyway, we would, you know, do a 3D point cloud and scan the whole property, and we'll build a 3D virtual model of that building, which we can then use to then take material quantities for. We can get more accurate measurements and all that type of stuff. So then the contract's more accurate. Yeah. Your quotation from your builder should be more accurate, and we can give you life cycle costs and what should fail and when it should fail. We could go as far as that, but it's not always needed in all projects. As I said, again, value. Not everyone needs all that information. Yeah, yeah. But essentially, so I learned that software while I was doing my first degree. Well, one of the principal softwares that delivers BIM, which is Revit. So when I was 19, when the school are teaching us all how to do 2D line drawings, I picked up on this thing. I was like, what I could do in 3D? I can draw a wall and everything like that. Like, this is crazy. So I told all my guys that were with me at that time, I was like, yo, you know, let's learn this thing. It's going to be really, really good. No one really listened. No one really listened.
You're the visionary in that space.
At the time. I don't think it's divine something that God downloaded to me. But essentially, so I learned that software. And when I started up my company, obviously we didn't have sort of the turnover that we could to just say, okay, this is all I'm going to do.
Yeah.
So one thing that I learned along the years was about contract work, you know, agency work and go about agency and stuff like that. And I then learned something I didn't know at the beginning was that a lot of major architecture firms, that's how they hired. They didn't hire people that sent CVs and stuff through the door.
Okay.
So I was wasting my time for years sending hundreds of CVs, hundreds of portfolios, spending hundreds of pounds, printing it, sending it, handing it in, all that stuff. I did all of that. Would not knowing that their HR sort of policy, unwritten, was that they hire via agency when they have a real need and real demand. So when I applied to an agency for some contract work that I did was going to do for my company, I told the agent, the agent asked me if I knew how to use Revit. I was like, what? I've been using that for like 11 years. Maybe like 8 years at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
And he or she, I can't remember, I think it's a man, was like, oh, can you do a test just to prove that? Because you haven't done it for another firm before. Yeah, yeah. Do you know what I mean? So I was like, okay, cool. Like, no problem. Done the test 100%.
Damn.
Literally called me straight away, was like, oh, no one's ever got 100% before. It's the first time it's ever happened.
She had to call you.
Straight away. And then I'm going to send you a list of companies that are interested in some of your skill set.
Wow.
Let us know which ones you would like to be put forward for.
Yeah.
I said, I gave her a list. She came back within 2 hours. Not even 2 hours.
Two days.
Within 2 hours and said, oh yeah, this company, TP Bennett, want you to, they like your, they've seen your portfolio, like that you can use Revit and stuff like that. They wait to start on Monday.
Well, so you found, you found a little...
No, interview. You did interview first and started, right?
No interview.
No interview.
Literally.
But you having that understanding of that software straight away.
Yeah. So me, I'm very techie. I'm a very techie guy. So that just happened like that. And then I realized that, oh wow, there's a real need for this in the market. Literally, I was using my company as a vehicle to basically navigate and collaborate with a lot of architecture firms. So for about 2 or 3 years, I worked at, in the space of 2 years, I worked probably about 8 major firms in the UK, and I was getting commanding the highest rates of pay. Like I was earning more than my managers in a lot of these places that I was doing. And obviously it's all through my company.
That's what I was going to
ask you. So I'm charging VAT. Yeah.
Wow. So you went through an agency and then you told them that I want to work through my company.
That's it.
Wow, boy.
So literally they paid VAT, everything, paid everything. No tax deduction, straight to me,
straight to you.
Like a normal client.
So was you working at one firm, stay for, let's say, 6 months to a year, then go to the next one? Or you saying I'm going to work everywhere?
I just said I'm going wherever the money's at.
Wow.
Wherever the money's at. So like when I'll be transparent with you guys because I can't be. So that first job was £16 an hour back then, which was a lot of money for me back then.
Yeah.
Within 9 months, I was on £32 an hour.
Oh, right.
And this is like 2015, 16.
That's good. That was a lot of money.
It was a lot of money. Yeah, well, provided for my family. So I was like, as I said, I come back to my initial point of starting up the company. It was to provide more money to because I knew that by the time I was studying my master's, I already had my girlfriend at the time. Mm. I knew I was going to make up a missus. I knew I was going to have a family. Mm-hmm. The idea was, I need to find a way to make money from this thing. So, and that was a way for a long time, the way that I did it. And until the market couldn't afford me anymore.
Yeah. You see Revit, what's it called?
Revit,
yeah.
Yeah.
So was this the first job that you got where you had to use that kind of skill?
Correct. No. So I was using it in my private work by myself, but in terms of working with other people, in terms of in a firm.
And you just had an inkling that, look, you know where technology is taking this industry, and I know I need to, need to clock this.
Yeah. I mean, even from the pay that they were offering, I knew that it was something that was massive in demand and something that was growing. Yeah. So I went from that to eventually, you know, agency being removed from the equation completely, and I'm direct for these companies, and they pay me direct. You know, as a separate company, like a subcontract. So I'm no longer in their firm. I'm in my own office.
Yeah.
Working, they're sending me packages to do. Mm-hmm. So, for example, a big company called SOM, who will be my friends forever. They're one of the directors there, Peter Jackson, great man, great friend. He facilitated for us to basically work on their 9 hours project. They're over in Battersea, and they basically subcontracted quite a significant portion of their work to us, which we delivered, which was amazing. And I just saw it as, this is the way that things are going to keep going. It's more tech, more efficiency. That's just the whole, like, the whole notion of 2D drawings is probably redundant.
You think they're looking for? Do you think they're looking? I'm seeing it in a lot of different industries, right? Even with us being young property developers in this space, you think the industry was calling for someone that's a bit young and has this point of view in terms of how to approach things, or is it just like good timing?
The way I see it is, the industry isn't necessarily calling. I think the people that have the money are calling for it. So I don't think architects are calling for it. I don't think the designers are necessarily calling for it, because there was resistance to change that we've seen in the market. There was a legislation passed in government for a lot of public frameworks that they had to be delivered using BIM. A lot of projects had to be delivered, government projects had to be delivered using BIM. So that basically forced a lot of architects to have to build this capability within their teams. Yeah. If they didn't have to, they wouldn't have done it. So then they're forced, which created a demand, and I've satisfied the demand for a number of our clients. So what a number of companies have started to do is obviously adopt and start to build their teams. So we were doing quite a lot of training and management for a lot of firms as well. But we just see this continuing. So obviously BIM is obviously an application. Eventually people start to, you know, use VR goggles to visualize what's behind that wall. So contractors on site will be able to see, okay, this is where the wall's going to be. Wow. Yeah, that's all possible. Wow. And it's being done in some places. Wow. But yeah, it's just,
it's crazy. It's
kind of where you see the future going, like with architecture.
With architecture, what we have is, I don't want to give away too much. So essentially you have resistance to change from the traditional sort of designers. Mm-hmm. What that resulted in is that the architectural role being subdivided. So architects historically were the master builder. Mm. So an architect would manage the whole project. There'll be no contractor, the architect is the head honcho. He'll get the builders, he'll be the project manager, he'll manage cost, he'll be the quantity surveyor, he'll be all of those things in one person, in one company, or one person, whatever. And so what would happen is that the architect, not being very savvy in terms of business, was not putting in place the right people to manage all that risk, because there's a lot of risk to be sort of the head honcho on a project. So what naturally happened with a number of shifts in industry, such as rethinking construction and a number of other things, and there's a report, begins with L, I can't remember the name, but anyway, the Latham report. What essentially happened was the master builder role got subdivided. So then you have main contractor, you have a contract administrator, you have quantity surveyor, all these other disciplines that have been sort of segmented from that pie that originally was the architect. Even recently, you have the architecture role being subdivided again, with design managers being created in design and build contractors. What you have now is contracts where the architect takes a project principally up to planning, and then a design and build contractor will take over the whole thing from that point onwards.
It's almost like taking the architect, they're just breaking it down, subdividing it into different roles.
And if the industry doesn't change, if the profession doesn't change, that's going to keep happening.
Okay.
So that's where I think more entrepreneurial sort of things needs to be championed. Yeah. More people that are thinking outside the box, like myself, you know, because I don't have all the answers, but we need more people that are going to push outside of the box of the normal architectural role, and that's very important for the profession going forward. Or else it's going to keep getting subdivided until you're sort of almost worthless.
Yeah. I think what's good about you is that you've got the architecture side, but you also got the business acumen. I think that's probably what they need to kind of maybe start teaching in the schools and adding that to the curriculum. I don't know.
Well, you're entirely right, because the traditional role right now for the architect, which is again why even what I did was sort of against the rule of thumb at the time, the role of an architect, the role of a designer is to study for all those years. Yeah. Then you go and work for a firm or a number of firms for 20 years, learn the game, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. And then when you're in your 40s or 50s, then you start up your practice. That's the game. That's the game right now. That's the game right now. So that's the game. So the game is that. And I said that ain't for me. I said that ain't for me.
You're old and grey.
I said that ain't for me because, I mean, if the pay was better, maybe it would have been. Maybe I would have just naturally gone along with everything. Yeah, yeah. But because the pay wasn't there, it just didn't make any sense for me.
I'm glad you went down this route anyway.
Oh, thank God. Yeah.
I was gonna say, like, we want to hear some success stories, because this is what we're here for. Like, maybe give us
a turning point.
Okay, let me give you one success story. Yeah. Okay, that happened actually fairly recently, which was quite.
In
quite
San Fran or Dubai? Or
No. It was in London. Okay, so cool. So imagine, I have a set of work for a client. I can't disclose too much because it's a bit sensitive, the project. I have a client who engaged me for a consulting bit of work. Relatively small bit of work, wasn't a massive fee associated with it, or something like 15 grand, something like that. And basically what happened was, during the process of that project, the client basically sold the building in the middle of my service.
While you were still, so you still had a job to
do? I still had a job to finish off, but they sold the building.
Okay.
Were you paid for
this? Where is this leading?
So I've been paid, I've been paid partially, and then the last payment hasn't been done yet. So I'm even like a bit worried, like, oh, damn, like what's going to happen? Who's going to pay me? So I'm reviewing the contract, all the rest of it. And it got to the point where it started getting a little bit of red tape, a little bit of murky waters, like whether we was actually going to get paid at all, for the latter part of our work. Yeah. But because the work, basically many people that lived within that asset needed that work to be done, I said, I'm still going to do it.
Yeah.
And I'll just bear the brunt of whatever losses and I'll try to recoup it later. So what happened was, because that happened, there was a little bit of painting that needed to be done.
Yeah.
And my everyone that I work with is very, very, very experienced on very good day rates. So I said, you know what? Let me just talk about do the painting myself. No, it was the interior, a bit of interior. Okay. So basically, majority of it was done. It was just like, literally maybe like 4 or 5 rooms. Mm-hmm.
That's still
quite
a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot.
It's not gonna be
okay.
One wall.
So it's like 4 or 5 rooms. But I'm the kind of person, like, on development, I don't mind getting my hands dirty. Do you know what I mean? Like, on my first development project that I did in Christian States, I was doing a lot of work on myself. Wow. You know, because we didn't have the capital back then. It was just it was the first one. You know, so we got to just it's elbow grease time. So I could paint the wall. I could do all of that. Do you know what I mean? I could do all these different types of things. But so I said, you know what? Rather than paying, which would have been about $1,000 or maybe even $2,000 for decorators to come and do it, I said, I'll just do it myself. Because it'll take me a few days, I'll just do it. Do you know? Because I had a bit of downtime. I wasn't so busy on the admin side of things. Yeah. Said, I'll do it. So I did it. And while I'm in the process of doing it, like, I'm proper, like, get the gear on, everything. Yeah. I got all that's in the garage at home. So, and basically during the process, the client, the new owners of the building have walked in.
Okay.
Oh.
The new owners of the building, so I see about 4 or 5 Jewish guys.
Yeah.
So they see me, they're like, oh, hi, you're right. I'm like, hi, you're right. Da, 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 da. Then what happened? Then they're like, oh, so how long do you think it's going to take before you finish? Because they know what I'm doing.
Yeah. Do they know who you are at this point? Or do they think
they think I'm a random decorator.
Anyways. So they're thinking, okay.
Mm-hmm. So you're just going with it right now.
So because basically the place, the 5 rooms were in different parts of the building.
Okay.
So they've come in, said hello, whatever, said that business, and they've gone on their way. I'm saying it to myself, I'm like, nah.
Yeah.
Nah.
5 people in the room.
5 people have come in this room and they do not know who I am. They think I'm the decorator.
Yeah, nah.
Nah.
I said, nah.
I didn't go all that degree.
I didn't say that to be the decorator. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So let me network. I said, let me network. But it's awkward, isn't it? You know what I mean? Because they're talking.
Sure?
They're talking.
Looking at you as well, like you sure you're like.
they're talking their numbers, whatever. So basically, I've gone back out into the hallway. I had to go and get something. Mm-hmm. And they're in the hallway and I've gone to him and said, look, this is who I am. Da, 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 da. Here's my card. If you're looking for other stuff, let me know. Because I do a bit of, as I said, off camera, I do a bit of facilitation. So if I've got opportunities or deals, I can sometimes package it on and pass it on or be involved or JV or whatever. So what happened was they took the card, but it's like, you know, the respect ain't there. Like, are you sure? Yeah, like, you're this guy. I'll take it to be polite. Let me know when you're finished. So that conference has gone down. I'm like, okay, cool. I knew it didn't go. I didn't hit it the way I need to hit it. So I said, okay.
Yeah.
My car's outside at the front of the building.
Hey.
So I timed it.
You've seen the car.
It's a madness. So I timed it so that when they went downstairs, I conveniently went downstairs to collect something. Went downstairs now, opened the gate, opened the trunk to get out. I think I saw paintbrushes inside there. I just went to go rummage in the back.
Yeah.
So then they've now come outside. And the guy's come outside and he's like, so tell me again what your name is.
Yeah, So when you
because
tell
of the
me
car,
you know, I'm telling you money.
So this is why.
I mean, sometimes
when you buy flashy cars,
I've been telling you to get the range. Sometimes.
What I would say is don't disrupt yourself to go and buy a car. Please.
Don't invest out your means. I
got car because I love cars. Yeah. It's not for status. Okay, yeah. I love cars. Anyway.
Okay.
But so then literally then all four of them come over and they're all talking to me like, oh yes, tell me what you do, 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 do.
You're lying to me.
So then he's like, oh yeah, give me a number, da, 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 da. Talk. Like the conversation is completely different now. Now it's
now respect is up here.
I'm with you. Yeah. We're having a conversation. So we're talking. He's like, okay, cool. I'm gonna get my brother to give you a call. He's the head of our acquisitions, whatever. Cool. That night, I think I left at 4 o'clock. On my way home, the brother calls me. It's like, yeah, I heard you in the architect that gets your elbows dirty, you know, the rest of it get hands dirty, you know, everything. Different. This is now the head of acquisitions. He's like, yeah, so we've got this and that to do. Would you be interested in doing this and that for us?
So now opportunities.
Now new opportunities have now come from it.
I'm assuming they're big opportunities with these, man.
Man said,
sorry.
My brother.
Hey, no comment. Anyway, so, and then I've gone on. So anyone I get into business new, I always do a company's house search on them.
Okay.
You know, just to know that who they are. Yeah. You know what I mean? Let's see what the financials are saying. Oh. I've gone on there. I've typed in one of the names. 98 appointments.
Okay. Oh, wow. Yards.
I've gone on the first one. Fixed assets, 10 million. Mm. Next one, fixed assets, 4 million. Next one, fixed assets, 5 million. I'm like, Jesus.
Who did I?
No online presence.
Oh, man.
No website. No nothing.
Oh, man.
So now we're engaged. Mm. So they engaged me on a project. They didn't even question me about my fee. No haggle, like no Kenny. Nothing. Mm. Just quick. Just moved on. So we've executed that project for them. Finished that.
Small projects. Big one.
This is six flats.
Six flats. Okay.
But it's on top of another building in Central London in Paddington.
Okay. Wow.
Location. You just said six flats. Central London.
Central London.
W1. Hey, clarity. And from then we've been engaging on other things and looking at different
such
things.
Such a blessing, though, bro. The fact that you're just there just to do elbow grease and then.
What did you learn?
But this is the thing. What I learned from that opportunity is never be too proud.
Mm. Yeah.
Never be too proud. Like no matter where God's brought you to, if you've got to get your hands dirty make things work, then that's what happened. And at the end of the day, the thing is that I'm a firm believer in Christ, and one of the things in the Word is that it says that all things work together for the good of those who fear Him. Mm. So the way I see it is, if that client paid me on time and they didn't sell the building, I never would have met these people.
Yeah.
If I didn't have to go through that, and the previous owners did pay the money.
Okay.
Literally paid.
So you even got paid.
I still got paid for the work that.
So you got paid to meet people to meet people.
Yeah.
So that was a blessing.
So that was a blessing. So the way I saw it was, never be too proud to work in something that the world tells you is maybe beneath your status level.
Well, there's even more to it, because you didn't need to finish that. You could have said, listen, until I know I'm getting my money, I'm not doing nothing. Mm. Do you know what I'm saying?
Or I could have been like that. And then when I got the money, I could have sent the decorator. Mm. Decorator would have said hello. They would have went out there by the way, and I never would have been connected with them. That's a little success.
But bro, your story's mad. We could probably say
100 success stories as well.
Bro, I was already saying to you off camera that you're the only architect now that I personally know. Do you know what I'm saying? Like,
that's crazy.
You chat to them, but I don't personally know any.
Yeah.
And especially being young, black, like, that's obviously a thing as well. So just talk to us on that journey and how you would advise someone who wants to get into it, like the steps they would need to take that makes sense.
So what I would say is, you need to make a niche for yourself. You need to find need in the market and master that need.
Yeah.
So that, because when you look at architecture as a discipline, there's many people that can build you any type of building. The building we're in, you know, we could find tens of thousands of people that could build this building.
Mm, yeah.
But you need to find a niche for yourself. So for me, at the time when I was coming out, it was the BIM and the tech sort of innovation on that.
Yep.
That created the market for myself and set me apart from A, B or C that may be next to me. And I think that as I've done developments and as I have this commercial sort of experience, that also sets me apart from a number of other architects. Mm. Because a number of architects only advise on design aspects. They can't always advise on construction costs. Mm. They can't always advise on, you know, buildability on sales value or gross development value. Mm. I can work up an appraisal for our clients. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, when I'm passing on things, facilitating things for my clients, I'm working up a full, you know, development appraisal because I know how to do it because I've done it.
Mm.
So not many architects I know, but I don't know any architects that I know that can do that.
Yeah.
And I see it as, why not?
Yeah.
It's not a hard skill to learn. Yeah. Why don't you do it? Then you have more value to give to a client.
Yeah.
So I think if architects and new young architects coming up focus on finding a niche to carve out a slice of the pie for themselves and focus on value for the people that have your money or have your instruction, then you'll be in a better position than those that are around you. Mm-hmm. If you're sitting there telling me that you're going to design the best building in the world and you're the best designer because you can draw the perfect roof structure or whatever, you're behind.
Mm-hmm.
You're behind because there's many designers, there's many seasoned architects that will design the perfect building. When you're young and you're coming up in the game, most of the time, that's not what people want.
Yeah.
And let's be honest, most projects, that's not what they want.
Yeah, yeah.
Most projects, most buildings that you look at, there's no high-end design that's being pushed.
Yeah.
You know, it's for an end goal of money, mm-hmm. rental value, whatever it is. But it's very rarely you find a project or and a client who wants to push the boundaries and go to, you know, getting awards and doing that design yeah. piece. So if you have a cohort of architects that all want to do that,
mm.
then you have a significant portion of your industry that's trying to compete for 2% of
yeah.
the work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas there's 98% which aren't glitz and glamour,
yeah.
which is bog standard,
yeah.
you know, office building, commercial to resi conversions, mm. all this other stuff mm. that, you know, it's not glamorous. It doesn't look great in your portfolio, but that's where the work is.
That's where the money is. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
So last time. I was just going to add as well, like you mentioned as well, the way that you kind of described getting into it is kind of how I've heard people get into Formula One. Like in a sense that you need to have money to get into.
Oh yeah.
It's just one of those things. So how would you advise someone who is also young and knows the route and knows that you're going to need money and backing and all that stuff?
So I would say when you start architecture, if you can work a part-time job, if parents can support you, then that's obviously the best situation. But for I'll just speak from my experience was for the majority of the beginning of my education, I had to work part-time.
Mm.
So all throughout my master's, I was working until the end of the second year to help facilitate yourself. If you can take on small jobs on the side, collaborate with other architects, collaborate with people that are a bit ahead. So let's say, for example, I'm yet to hear of somebody, and I'm surprised that it hasn't happened yet.
Mm.
Young architect maybe has a project for a relative or a friend, approach me and be like, David, I've got this project.
Oh my God, after this podcast, I'm going to get a few.
David, can you help me do this project?
Yeah.
And I would more than happily, you know, split the fees, whatever it is, it's probably not even going to be worth it for me. But if it can give you that leg up that you need and a bit of clout behind you and that little bit of backing behind you that you need to do it.
That is amazing.
I would love to collaborate with somebody and a young architect do for me what comes at SOM, who are a major national company, built Burj Khalifa in Dubai.
Yeah.
They partnered with me on when I was small, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like, if I can do that for somebody else, more than happy to do it. But obviously, it has to make sense.
Yeah.
So that would be my advice. So find people that can support you as you push. I think we need more entrepreneurs. Right now, there's a disparity in terms of race within architecture, especially at high levels. I mean, generally, black people make less than 1% of registered architects in the UK. And even less so at director and partner level. And I think the solution to that is more black firms. So we need more people to create more firms. I know that creates competition for me, but I like competition. and that's what we need at the end of the day. Like I think if you're gonna sit there and say you're gonna go the traditional way in terms of I'm gonna learn to become the best designer I can, I'm gonna go work for a firm for 20 years and then maybe start up a practice if I do want to do that. That's fine. If that's what you believe, that's what's there for you. Then I think okay. But I would always ask the question. I'm always a firm believer in asking questions. Ask a question of why am I believing this? Why am I going that path? And so my question to if a young architect was going to come to me is why are you pursuing the way that you want to pursue? Why are you pursuing the career in the way you're pursuing it? Why can't you create your own firm? Why can't you do different things? Why can't you do partnerships and do something maybe even globally? Go abroad. So that would be my advice.
Yeah. Where can they find you? Because you mentioned something.
Oh yeah, it's crazy. socials, my personal page is David JNR AJ, which is ADJEI. That's David JNR AJ ADJEI. That's Instagram. Company Instagram page is cognition.london. Company website is cognition.london. am I anywhere else? No, that's it. That's it. That's it at the moment. I mean, YouTube and all that stuff will come eventually. I mean, yeah. I've been meaning to sort of go through a whole process.
I did see a video of you with Jade Van Ryn. We had Jade on like maybe a couple weeks, couple months ago now.
Yeah.
I saw you did a video.
Yeah, Jade's lovely. Yeah. Yeah. Shout out Jade. Yeah. Her video was seen by so many people. Yeah. I didn't expect it at all. Like that was the response to that video was absolutely crazy. So people, clients came from that video. Yeah. Recognition generally. Yeah, people were like, oh, I've seen you somewhere before. Well, oh, you did a tour on YouTube and stuff like that, which is cool. So shout out Jade on that. She's doing amazing things as well. So,
Well, bro, thank you so much, cool, man, for coming.
Appreciate you.
We're gonna keep an eye on you and hopefully we'll be working with you as well.
Come on,
we're working with you.
I've got to say, we've got some new innovations coming. So, watch your space. We've got some stuff. AI related coming out, stuff in the tech space coming out as well. So
amazing.
So look out for it.
Watch your space. All right, guys. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Like you said, reach out to David if you want to contact him. And till next time, stay blessed, stay invested.
Peace.